And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today I'd like to talk to you about the minds. That's right. The minds and the souls of those men who rule over us secretly. The men and some women, of course, of the Illuminati. The Illuminati. You know, the very word Illuminati means those who believe they are illumined. They are of the light. And throughout occult literature, you find allusions to the light. They call themselves the Army of Light. Those in the occult world and the secret societies actually talk about these ascended masters, these really demon spirits, who in the spirit world are beings of light. Well, of course, the Bible talks about the devil himself coming disguised as an angel of light. Many in the New Age movement in the occult world say that the angelic brotherhood that is assisting them, we would call them devils or demons, are to be called the White Brotherhood. White. Now, this has no allusion to race. Doesn't mean they're Caucasians or white people. No, they're demon spirits. But you see, they disguise themselves as angels of light. The Apostle Paul said even Satan himself and his ministers, his devils, come to us disguised as angels of light, as ministers of righteousness, and so forth. And you know, whether it's Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Barack Obama, Lord Jacob Rothschild, they all proclaim that they want to give us a utopia, a new world order, a novus ordo seclorum, a world of light. And so they're going to deny that they are part of the darkness. Oh no, it's the true Christians, it's the true patriots that are the brotherhood of darkness. The Illuminati are the brotherhood of light. The enlightened ones, they call themselves. But you know, the Bible itself, the Bible gives us the answer as to who really is the brotherhood of darkness. I want to talk to you today about men who love the darkness. They can proclaim they're the light all they want. You know, some years ago, I found a very rare book, and I was able to obtain a copy of it, and you just won't find this book anywhere. But it talked about the coming solar brotherhood. The solar, S-O-L-A-R, brotherhood. Well, you know, from time immemorial, pagans, secret societies, cultists, occultists, the Illuminati have worshipped the great sun god, and all of the planets and all of the planetary presences, the stars and so forth, as angelic beings of light. Did you know that Lucifer himself, his very name comes from the Latin word lux, which means light. So he's a being of light. And in the New Age occult movement, sometimes they call their angel Lucifer the solar logos, the solar spirit, the spirit of the sun. Helena Blavatsky, in her book, The Secret Doctrine, talked about the solar logos, and she says the one whom we worship is the central sun. I wrote a book exposing the the New Age movement and the Illuminati elite and the secret societies. I called it Dark Majesty, the secret brotherhood, and the magic of 1,000 points of light. So they are masquerading as points of light. And they want to bring us more light. In the Masonic fraternity, every Mason professes that he is seeking more light. He can't seem to get enough of light. This brought me, by the way, to ask the question, why is it that even as they profess to be in the light and that they are seekers after the light, in reality, they embrace and love the darkness? I was reading the Gospel of John, chapter 3 recently, and it was talking about God loving the world so much that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And the very next few verses after that, that's John 3:16, I think also are very important. Verse 17 says, "For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved." And verse 18 is very interesting. It says, "He that believeth on him," in other words, he that believeth on Jesus, "is not condemned. But he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God." Incidentally, you know, it's so fascinating to me. Some people accuse me of damning people to hell. Well, you're consigning so-and-so to hell. Well, you're saying that hundreds of millions of Muslims are going to hell. You're saying that a billion Hindus are going to hell. Oh, whoa. Oh, you're so bad. You're such a bad person, Tex Mars. You're condemning people to hell. Oh, well, what a mighty man I would be if I had that power to condemn people to hell. Can you imagine the power? Well, Jesus Christ has that very power, but Tex Mars has none of it. I cannot condemn you or anyone else to hell. I can only tell you what the scriptures say about those who disobey and refuse to believe in the Son of God. It's interesting that if you don't believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, it says here, you're condemned already. In effect, you're condemning yourself. It's a done deal. When you get up to the judgment seat of God, the only question he's going to ask you is, do you believe in my Son? Well, it's too late to lie about it. I know there's going to be multitudes who say, yeah, I believe in him now. Give me another chance. I didn't know before, but here I am standing now. And there he is sitting on the throne. Oh, yeah, I believe in him. Well, it's too late. You're already condemned. He that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. So, you know, I remember in the Air Force, I was giving a court-martial to a young man. I was a military officer, and the young man complained to me. Actually, wasn't a young man. He was about 30 years old. He was a staff sergeant. He said, "Do you know what you're doing? You're hurting my career." I was a captain. I was, "Captain Mars, this is going to be a black mark on my career. Do you understand what you're doing to me, sir?" Huh? He had been brought into me for failure to obey a lawful order and for cursing his superior officer. He had a little fit of temper and refused to do something he was ordered to do. Then he turned around and cursed the officer in charge. So there he was brought up on charges before me. Now, he didn't deny that he had done it, but he just didn't like the fact that I was going to mete out, I was going to dole out punishment for what he had done. He said, do you understand that I may not get promoted again? This is going to really hurt my career, what you're doing to me, Captain. And I looked at the man and I very calmly said, what you did to yourself, what you've already done to yourself. You see, he had condemned himself already when he did the foul deeds. I'm just a judge. I just mete out the punishment. Of course, I had already asked him, are these things true? We have these witnesses that say you did ABC. Is this true? Well, yes, but. And then he didn't like it because he got punished. But he was the one who did it, and so I'm just simply fulfilling my duty. And of course, there are many people that their mitigating circumstances are, you know, I try, you know, when I can, I tried to be as lenient and merciful as I could. But some people, this particular individual had been given several chances before until finally it was too late. Their only remedy was a court martial. And that was very sad. But that's what happens. Now, verse 19 really gets good. It says, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Wow. Now, this is the condemnation for everyone who refuses to believe in the name of the only begotten Son of God, Jesus Christ. What is the condemnation? Well, first of all, here's an explanation of how they're condemned. It says that light is coming to the world. Who is that light? Jesus Christ. The light of the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He is the light of the world. And men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. Jesus came as the Son of God, as light, pure light. There is no turning of darkness in him, the Bible says. But men refused the light. If they had obeyed the light, if they had sought the light, if they had known that it was Jesus Christ who was the light and believed in him, they would have repented of their sins and been saved. Instead, they loved the darkness so much that they said no to the light. And thus they condemned themselves. That was the condemnation. But why would they do it? Why do the Illuminati do evil things? The Bible talks about inventors of evil things. The Illuminati have actually invented wars, bloodshed, economic chaos, murders, crises, one after another. But they love the darkness. Now the Illuminati can claim all day, we're the illumined ones, we love the light, but they are proven to be liars because they rejected the light whereby they might be saved. Why? Because their deeds are evil. They're robbing, they're marauders, they're stealing from you and me, they're defrauding people. They're taking our money, they're taking our property, they're taking our wives, they're taking our husbands, they're taking our jobs, they're turning the world into a global plantation with us as the serfs and peasants, and they treat men and women unmercifully, and they give us vaccines that kill us on purpose. And they start revolutions and wars, and they torture people in gulag concentration camps. And I'm talking about the Illuminati throughout the ages. We can go all the way back to Adam Vishop, the founder of the Order of the Illuminati in 1776, to Barack Obama, who today still has no doubt tens of thousands of prisoners in American gulags, not only in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, but throughout the world where we are torturing people. Many of them innocent, have done nothing, and we have no evidence against them. But we place them in chains and proceed to inflict pain and suffering because we have devil minds. These people that do such things, the Cheneys, the Obamas, the Bidens, the Rothschilds, the Netanyahus, the Ariel Sharons, the Sarkozys, the Blairs, the Browns, and all the others, the Condi Rices and the Hillary Rodham Clintons, monsters, depraved beings from the pit of hell because they're possessed. They love the darkness. Don't let them fool you for 1 minute. And men love the darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. You see, light brings into pure focus a man's deeds. Shine light on something, you can see what's really going on. That's why they hate the truth. The words that you and I speak of truth, these men despise. I was recently reading in Canada, they have a human rights tribunal. And if you say anything negative or bad, even if it's true about Jews, or for that matter about any religion, Hindus, Muslims, you can be called up before the human rights tribunal. And one of the directors of the tribunal was a little bit upset because people were coming, were being called, subpoenaed before the tribunal, and they were being demanded to explain why they had been exposing Zionists and what Israel was doing to the Palestinians and so forth. And the men who were being called up before the tribunal said, well, I have evidence here of that what I say is true. Well, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal got furiously angry. How dare you bring truth before us? We don't want to hear the truth. We just want to know, did you say these things? Well, yeah, but they're true. Well, we don't want you to say them, whether they're true or not. Did you know that the Human Rights Tribunal has now asked one of the top officials, has asked the Parliament of the Nation of Canada to outlaw truth? If, for example, you believe maybe the Holocaust didn't happen the way that the Jews say it happened, and let's say you present forensic evidence that gas chambers didn't kill so many or whatever, and you have the audacity to come before the Human Rights Tribunal of Canada. And by the way, they're doing the same thing in the court system in today's so-called Democratic Republic of Germany. And you try to present your evidence, and it's true. They say truth is not a defense. And this is what they're going to do with these hate crime laws that they're passing in America or trying to get passed. They're going to make it so that even if you tell the truth, it's not a defense. If you say something bad about someone else's religion, the Muslims, the Hindus, the Buddhists, the witches, the Jews, it doesn't matter if it's true. They just don't want you to say it. You see, they hate, they despise, they loathe the light. Don't bring us the light. Accept our lie. Profess the lie. No wonder Solzhenitsyn, author of the Gulag Archipelago, who exposed the Gulag concentration camps and all of their monstrosities in Soviet Russia, Solzhenitsyn said, one word of truth outweighs the whole world. That's how powerful truth is. What an antiseptic is the light of truth. Verse 20 there in John 3 says, "For every one that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved." You get that? Everyone that's evil, that does evil, hates light. And they don't come to the light. They avoid the light. They stay in the darkness like cockroaches. Because their deeds will be reproved. In other words, their deeds will... reproved means more than just criticized. Exposed. Unmasked for what they are. Evil deeds. That's why the Human Rights Tribunal says, don't bring us truth. We want to know if you're going to profess and believe in our lies. And we'll convict you for telling the truth. Verse 21, though, says, "But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest that they are wrought in God." In other words, that they're of God. When you do something that's truthful, it has to be of God. Because God is the author of truth. I think that's pretty important. Let me tell you something, my friends. The wrath of God is fallen on every man that refuses to come to the light. The wrath of God is fallen on every man that refuses to come to the light. It's reading Luke, the Gospel of Luke, chapter 8, verses 16 and 17. It says that if a man knows the light, has the light, does works related to the light, meaning the light of truth, did you know that those things will shine forth? Listen to what it says here. It says, "No man, when he hath lighted a candle, cover it with a vessel, or putteth it under a bed. But instead he setteth it on a candlestick, that they who enter in may see the light. For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hidden that shall not be known and come abroad." Friends, everything the Illuminati is doing in the darkness someday will come to light. It will be manifested, and you and I will see that darkness. They say we will do these secret things and no man sees us, but God sees them. He's watching. And sometimes God, in his good pleasure, lets you and me open up the veil of darkness just a bit and peer inside, and we can see what's going on. I love in the Bible where Ezekiel didn't know what was going on behind the wall in the temple. Temple seemed like a holy place, a wonderful place. All these elders of Zion, oh, they were so holy and righteous and oh. Just like so many pastors and televangelists today. And they quote the Bible and they say this and they tell you if you give $1,000 to their ministry, God will pay you back 100-fold and on and on. And they look so holy, but they're putrid and they're dirty inside. They're just like whited sepulchers, whited corpses. They're like mummies. Take a dead man from ancient Egypt. Take off the white tape that they roll the mummies with, and what do you find? Putrid, decayed, moth-eaten bodies. Because all of our bodies are going to go back to dust someday, and only the spirit is going to go into another realm, either to be with God in heaven or down to be with the devil in hell. You're going to, if you love the darkness so much, my friends, you're going to have a whole eternity of it. Well, some say, well, that's not a bad idea. That's what they say now. You know, Milton wrote his famous book, Dante. It says, "Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven." I've heard rock and roll groups say that. It's better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. Well, first of all, dear friends, that shows you they don't want to serve God anywhere, on earth or in heaven. They don't want to serve. They don't want to obey God. They want to do their own thing. They want to do as they will. But what a fallacy to think you're going to reign in hell. So you die and you go to hell. You think the devil's going to say, come, my son, sit on the throne I prepared for you? Are you kidding me? You better read the story of Lazarus and the rich man that Jesus gave. You know, the rich man died. He had a life of ease. He had a life with luxury and everything he wanted right here on this earth. But when he died, he was in hell, and it was a bad place, and it was a burning place. And he was suffering miserably, and he had great pain, and he begged, please, if I could only have a little bit of water, my tongue is so parched from this fiery place, and please go tell my living relatives don't live the way I did, or they'll end up here too, this hellish place. Wouldn't any picnic down there, my friends? There's no mansions in hell. There's no fun times anymore. There's no pleasures. There's no alcohol in hell either. There's no sex in hell either. There is burning and torment. Now, some people say, well, I don't think a loving God would ever send man to such a place where he would be tormented forever and ever. I don't care what you think. It's what it says in the Bible. I know a lot of people say, well, Tex, you have to understand the word forever and ever really doesn't mean forever and ever. Oh, shut up. What it says is what it says. You'll be tormented forever and ever in a burning hell. Well, I just can't believe that. I don't care. Please listen to me very carefully for just a quick moment. I only care what God says. What you say, what I say means absolutely zilch, nada, nothing, zero. Because I believe him. You're not going to reign in hell. You're going to suffer in hell. You don't want to serve in heaven? Then suffer in hell. Why do the Illuminati do the evil things they do? When we come back, I'm going to tell you about a book by Robert Anton Wilson called The Mask of the Illuminati. I think he had the understanding. He wasn't a Christian, but he wrote this little novel, Mask of the Illuminati. I think he knows why the Illuminati do the evil things they do. I want to tell you a little bit about Ayn Rand. You know, she wrote the book Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead. She's very popular today. Ayn Rand. I'll tell you about her a little bit and one of the Rothschilds. And we've got so much more for you. Please stay with us. You're listening to Tex Mars. We're talking about men who love the darkness. Why do they do it? Right here on Power of Prophecy. This text Mars again. You know, if you've never read my best-selling book, Dark Majesty, The Secret Brotherhood, and The Magic of 1,000 Points of Light, I encourage you to do so. The book is only $20 and I've got it here in front of me. It's around 290 pages long. And I'll tell you, you'll find out what God the Illuminati worship. Who is the God whom they worship, whose name they conceal? But you'll find out more of the secret societies, especially about the Order of Skull and Bones. This was only the second book in the world ever published exposing the Order of Skull and Bones. The first was by my good friend, the late, what's his name? My goodness, Anthony Sutton. Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, Anthony Sutton, great man. He was the one who wrote the secret establishment about the Order of Skull and Bones. And you know, when right before he passed away, he sent me all of his card files and his information about the members of the Skull and Bones. And then an anonymous gentleman one time sent me an entire list of the membership of the Order of Skull and Bones. But you'll read about the world conspiracy, about the Order of Skull and Bones, about the Council on Foreign Relations, the great work of the Illuminati, the Bilderbergers, and other conspirators. Dark Majesty is the title of the book by Tex Mars. You can get a copy of Dark Majesty by phoning us in the United States or Canada, toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. You can write to us and send a check for $25. That would be $20 for the book, Dark Majesty by Tex Mars, and $5 for shipping and handling. Postpay then a total of $25. To do so, just send us a check or money order or cash to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. That's 78733. Now, of course, all of our books are available on my website, my internet website, powerofprophecy.com. That's all one big word now, run together, powerofprophecy.com. And you can order Dark Majesty. By the way, you can see previews of all of my videos there. Just, you know, one, you know, like 2 minute, 3 minute little shorts or about each of my videos, including my latest video, Face to Face with the Devil. Talk about men loving the darkness. Boy, there it is. All right. Let's return to our regular program now. We're talking about Dark Majesty, about men who love the darkness. Why do the Illuminati elite do evil things? You know, I believe it's because they're rebels. They're in rebellion against God. They don't want to serve God. The Apostle Paul said that rebellion against God is the same as the evil of witchcraft. If you're in rebellion against God, you're nothing but a witch. You can say, oh, no, I don't believe in spells or potions, and I don't do all those things that witches do and cook up, you know, brews, you know, legs of toads and noses of some grasshoppers and put them in a big pot and boil them and say a magic incantation. No, you may not do that. But in your simple little rebellion against God, that's the same as witchcraft, the Apostle Paul said. God doesn't find any difference with it. You know, there's a man named Saul Alinsky. He's dead now. He's in hell. But he came from the city of Chicago in Illinois. And he wrote a book that was used by Hillary Rodham Clinton and Barack Obama and Bill Ayers and all, I mean, thousands of occult liberals have used that book, Rules for Radicals. Hey, that's what Barack Obama says he used as a community organizer. He used Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals. Hillary Clinton says it's one of the books that greatly impacted her life. One of the top three or four books that she ever read that had such an effect on her mind. I find that interesting because Saul Alinsky, in his book, Rules for Radicals, has a dedication page. Would you like to know, dear friends, who Saul Alinsky, this Jewish Chicago radical, in his book, Rules for Radicals, a book embraced by Barack Obama and Hillary Rodham Clinton. Would you like to know who he dedicated his book to? Well, I'll just tell you. Lucifer. It's right there in the book. He dedicates the book to Lucifer. Why? Because he says Lucifer was the first great rebel. Alinsky is teaching people in his book how to be in rebellion against authority. And he dedicates his book to the first great rebel, Lucifer. Wow. I guess he would agree then with Dante, the play written by Milton, better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. But of course today, he's serving in hell. He's serving the devil big time in a burning, fiery, hideous place. Well, what really was Alinsky all about? What is Obama and Clinton all about? What was Bill Clinton about when he flouted convention and tradition and had sex, even using a cigar with a young woman, an intern in his office, and then claimed he didn't see how that had anything to do with the character needed to be president of the United States? That's what all of his defenders said. They're all a bunch of rebels. Radicals. And I believe they would agree with Aleister Crowley, the British Satanist, who said, "Do as thou will shall be the whole of the law." Excuse me. In fact, that's the number one commandment. That's the whole commandment. You know, Jesus said the greatest commandment of all is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Well, they say our greatest commandment is to do as you want. Do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. That's what Aleister Crowley, the late infamous British Satanist, who pridefully called himself the B666, stated. That's the one cardinal commandment that satanic rebels agree to. Anton Zander LaVey, the Jewish, yes, another Jewish radical, who founded the Church of Satan in 66, and who wrote the best-selling, it's still one of the best-selling books in the world, the Satanic Bible. He has the Ten Commandments for Satanists in his book. But he said the greatest is simply, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. LaVey agrees with that statement by Crowley then. You know, some years ago, a man named Robert Anton Wilson, I believe he's passed away now, but he wrote a number of novels and even nonfiction books on occultism. And he was not a Christian, unfortunately. But he wrote a little book that I found quite fascinating and interesting. It was entitled Masks of the Illuminati. Masks, M-A-S-K-S, of the Illuminati. Had a lot of interesting information, even though it was a novel, it was a fiction novel. But he had done some of the research, obviously, and he knew what they really believed. In one key passage, he gives sort of the main doctrine, the real doctrine of the satanic rebels. In the novel, a man named Jones is speaking to another character named Sir John, the main character. And Sir John's mind is sent reeling by what he reads that's given to him by this man. And by the way, supposedly, this is a summary of a group called the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Order of Oriental Templars, which is, you know, a satanic secret society. And they had rules. They have commandments, a way of behaving. And supposedly in this novel, Mask of the Illuminati, to become a member of this secret society or occult society known as the Ordo Templi Orientis, you must sign three copies of a very peculiar document. And here's what the document says. It says, first, there is no God but man. Man has the right to live by his own law. Man has the right to live in the way that he wills to do. Man has the right to dress as he wills to do. Man has the right to dwell where he wills to dwell. Man has the right to move as he will on the face of the earth. Man has the right to eat what he will. Man has the right to drink what he will. Man has the right to think what he will. Man has the right to speak as he will. Man has the right to write as he will. Man has the right to mold as he will. Man has the right to carve as he will. Man has the right to work as he will. Man has the right to rest as he will. Man has the right to love as he will, where, when, and with whom he will. Man has the right to kill those who would thwart these rights. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, they gave a sort of a shorthand statement of this very code. It was called, do your own thing. A little Texas twang there. Do your own thing. Hey man, do your own bag. March to the drummer as you want to. Crowley said the same thing. Anton LaVey of the Church of Satan said the same thing. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you will. Now, you may think that this is an odd thing because there's so many conventions and traditions that, you know, men must conform to, it seems like. And a lot of people work very hard just to escape all of the, you know, conformities. They try to escape the traditions and do their own thing. But if you go too far, dear friends, that you can violate the laws of God. But see, in the secret society, they said there is no law of God. There's only man's law. So man is God. This is anarchy. Every man doing as he will. The Bible warns of men who do what is right in their own eyes. Somebody came to me one time and dared me to find anything wrong with the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, you dare me to find something wrong with it? Find one thing that's unbiblical about it. You cannot, they said. I said, well, give me what do you believe in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, we have 12 steps. Well, show me your 12 steps, I said. That's simple. I noticed right away, one of the earliest steps said that you must believe in God as you understand him. Another step said that you must believe or turn your life over to a higher power. I said, God as you understand him, what if you understand him as Satan? Well, the man says, well, then I guess you'd have to worship Satan. Well, what's the name of your higher power, I said. He said, well, he doesn't have any name. It's whatever anybody wants to give him. It can be Ramakrishna. It can be Mother Goddess Kali. It can be Allah. It can be Jesus. Whatever name. You can take your own self as God. Tex Mars can be your own higher power. So I said, so I can worship myself in AA. They said, oh, well, yes. I said, well, I could just take this military boot over here and call that my higher power. Well, yeah. And I wanted to laugh. And you think this is biblical? You think this is what God wants? That wasn't much longer, not too long after that, then somebody called me from San Antonio, Texas. They were trying to help a young man, you know, reform from being an alcoholic. And the pastor told him, well, take him down and introduce him to Alcoholics Anonymous. They'll help him. You know, like the church didn't have anything to do with it. We can't help him, but take him to Alcoholics Anonymous. They'll help him. Hey, friends, if the Christian church can't help a man get rid of the sin and vice of alcoholism, you think some man organization built by men, founded by men, can do anything at all? Are you out of your head? You crazy? So they did. They took him down there. Now, it just so happened that this young man not only was an alcoholic, but he was a Satan worshiper. And they asked Alcoholics Anonymous, can you help us? Can you help rehabilitate this young man from our church? And the director, the head of that particular chapter of AA in San Antonio, Texas, sure we can. They said, well, we want to make sure that you'll help this man because he really needs God in his life, they said. Because he worships Satan. And the head of the Alcoholics Anonymous, the chapter there, said, oh, just a moment now. We can't tell him what God to worship. We can just tell him that he should worship the God of his own understanding, the higher power of his choice. You see, they were a pro-choice group. And if the man wanted to worship Satan, the young man, that was his choice. They were not going to try to convert him to any other God. That was his God. The people from the church were absolutely flabbergasted. They had heard me criticizing Alcoholics Anonymous on the radio, and they called me to tell me, well, Tex, you were absolutely right. Turning over this young man for help to them was like turning him over to the devil. Well, the devil already had him in his grasp. Now, listen to me, friends. Some people say, well, I'll tell you what I am. I'm a libertarian. I do what I want. I do when I want. I do with whoever I want. I'm a libertarian. I read books by Ayn Rand, A-Y-N Rand. I read the Atlas Shrugged book, and boy, I tell you, I believe in, she has a religion. It's not like an old, ugly, stupid Christianity. It's called objectivism. I like to be objective. Well, you know, I've read all of Ayn Rand's works. She's not objective. Are you kidding me? Her philosophy is narcissism, selfishness. Her religion, Ayn Rand in The Fountainhead, but especially in her seminal book, the number one book that she wrote, number one bestseller, Atlas Shrugged. All the way through it, it's almost like you keep reading over and over. Do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Do what is pleasurable and selfish so that you can have your best life now. Sounds like something Joel Osteen may have written too. There's no such thing as altruism. Follow your own selfish ends. Objectivism. That's her philosophy. Recently watched a movie, Wanda and I, about Ayn Rand, and evidently it was a true movie. It really showed her everything from her sexual wickedness. She had a swinger lifestyle. Tried to steal other women's husbands. For a while, she had an affair with a Rothschild. Philippe de Rothschild. When she died, they laid her body in a coffin in this room, and people, you know, that just almost worshipped Ayn Rand and her writings came and saw her coffin. And right beside the coffin, I'm telling you the truth, they had a great big poster made up, and it had a symbol on it. And when you ask, I guess you'd call him the funeral director or whatever, the people that were there, why do you have this symbol on a poster, on an easel, or, you know, right there, right by her coffin? They said, well, that's what she believed in. That's what she wanted. That symbol signifies what she believed in. Friends, would you like to know what that symbol was at her funeral? Or service. She didn't really have any service because she didn't believe in heaven or hell. She just believed in do whatever you want to right now. Whatever pleases you right now. I'll tell you what her symbol was that signified her life. It was a dollar sign. A dollar sign on a great big poster right by her coffin. Her casket. Well, you know, Karl Marx said the God of the Jews is money. A famous Jewish writer back in the 19th century, Heinrich Heine, said money is the God of the Jews and Rothschild is his prophet. The prophet of money, Rothschild. Ayn Rand was Jewish. She was a Jew. She had an affair with one of the Rothschilds even. And you think this woman is going to give you the philosophy, I'm a libertarian. Well, even Ron Paul was once a libertarian. I believe in rugged individualism, doing whatever you want. Well, the head of the Church of Satan believed that. Saul Alinsky, who dedicated his book to the first great rebel, Lucifer, believed in that. And friends, that's Lucifer's doctrine. And that's the Illuminati's doctrine. Robert Anton Wilson was correct in his book, Mask of the Illuminati. That is the satanic doctrine. No wonder they have the S. I think that stands as the dollar bill sign. That stands for Satan with two lines going down it. What do those two lines stand for? I think one stands for the Father, one stands for the Son. The Father of Hell, Satan, and his Son, the Antichrist. That's the two vertical lines going down the S on the dollar symbol. By the way, Ayn Rand's real name was Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum. You can read about that in Wikipedia or any other encyclopedia. Why did she change her name to Rand? Well, she typed on a typewriter that was made by the Remington Rand Company. So she just adopted the last name there, Rand, as hers. Her first name was Allison, so she said, I think I'll call myself Ann. But not like Ann, A-N-N, it should be Ayn, A-Y-N. Friends, I'm telling you, this woman loved the darkness. She embraced the darkness. And I hope she got plenty of money while she was in this world, because you can't take it with you, said the Apostle Paul. I've heard of people, heard one man in West Texas said, when I die, I want you to take me, put me in the front seat of my Cadillac convertible, and bury the whole thing. I understand they did. They dug a big hole, put him in the front seat of his Cadillac convertible car, and buried the whole thing in the ground. He tried to take it with him. Well, I bet you it's not in a very good shape today if you dig it out. Rusted, decaying, just like his body. But his spirit is somewhere else. His soul, it's gone. Those were just artifacts, his body and his car. You know, it's interesting, in the New Age movement, which is an occult movement, of course, and I've written many books exposing it. Wanda wrote New Age Lies to Women. I wrote Dark Secrets of the New Age, Mystery Mark of the New Age, Ravaged by the New Age, New Age Cults and Religions, many books exposing it. It's interesting that even as they say they're the light bringers, the light workers, and their God really is Lucifer, who they call the angel of light. Nevertheless, they have a doctrine which says the way to true happiness is to embrace the darkness. Isn't that strange? I think I mentioned this on the air before, had a real good friend of mine from old Air Force chaplaincy days. John and his wife came to see me some years ago. I said, John, you going to church now? He said, yeah, I go to an Episcopal church. Or he said, but we're thinking of leaving. I said, really? Why? Well, he said, you know, we've always been Episcopalians, but our pastor went off to some seminar in New Mexico. They had a New Age seminar that taught them things. I said, yeah. And when he came back, he started preaching to us about everything he had learned. He said it changed his life. I said, really? Well, what did they teach him there? Well, they told him, and they taught all the Episcopal pastors that were there, that Jesus had a shadow. He wasn't all light. He had a dark shadow. And that all of us, all as human beings, are made up both of light and darkness. and that we each, as a human being, have our shadows. And the only way to true happiness is to merge, amalgamate, consolidate the dark and the light in one person. You know, you become like a morphodite, both light and dark. That's what the Freemasons teach. They even have a checkerboard floor, black, white, alternating. They have a double-headed eagle, two heads on one body. That's what the Orientalists tell you, yin and yang, black and light. And they want you to merge them together. And in the satanic Jewish Kabbalah, they teach that a person to truly be holy must do as much sin as possible. Only a person who has tasted evil can be holy. To taste the maximum of evil brings purity. Well, I guess Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin and Hitler and all the other monsters of history, they've been pure people then, obviously. You see, this is what the occultists do. They hide things. They seek to embrace the shadows, the darkness. No wonder our dollar bill hid a secret obverse side or reverse side. Everybody thought until 1935, well, the great seal of the United States is the eagle with a star on top of it, the six-pointed star, which is a story in itself. Look at your $1 bill. On the right-hand side, you have the great eagle of the United States and the six-pointed star over its head, and that's called the great seal of the United States. But nobody knew that there was a hidden reverse side of it. And on 1935, Franklin Roosevelt, on the advice of his Secretary of Agriculture, of all people, Henry Wallace, who, like FDR, was a high-level Freemason, they put the Masonic symbol, which was the reverse side. Our founding fathers gave us a reverse side, a hidden side of our great seal. And the great seal tells you what the country stands for. Now, the eagle supposedly is a sign of God. But on the reverse side, there's the all-seeing eye of Osiris, the sun god of Egypt, and the pyramid of Egypt, and the inscription in Latin, Novus Ordo Seclorum, or New World Order. 1935, it came out of the dark. Inventors of evil things. What are we to do about these things, dear friends? Well, I think Jesus said it best. He said, if thine eye be single, then your whole body will be full of light. Be single-minded in your devotion to God, dear friends. Let God live through you. Let Him inhabit your body, and your body will indeed. Your mind, your heart will be full of light, as He is the light. I love what Jesus said in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but thine, O Lord. That's the will that we need to seek. That's the light of the world. It can change a man or a woman forever. And it can, and only that light can bring true happiness, true joy forever and ever. Well, this is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy today. It's been a pleasure to be with you. And my hope, my prayer is that you'll be with us each week and discover the power of prophecy.